Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Good evening. I'm Dara McIntosh. Last night, in primetime, President Obama continued the pressure on health care reform.
If we do not reform health care, your premiums and out-of-pocket costs will continue to skyrocket. If we don't act, 14,000 Americans will continue to lose their health insurance every single day.
Then this morning, politicians and pundits ramped up the volume in their own special way.
I have a hard time believing people walked away with a very clear sense of what he's trying to do to fix it.
Every one of us in Congress have a good health care plan. If we had to go through what most Americans are going through, we'd be busy trying to fix this.
And just hours ago, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid responded by saying, "Don't expect a rushed vote." This buzzing debate in Washington has stirred some hopes and fears in local health care providers, including community health centers, who are likely to get a boost in funding if President Obama has his way. One proposal being considered in Congress would triple the funding for centers over the next 10 years. Dr. Zach Rosen is the medical director at the Montefiore Family Health Center in the Fordham section of the Bronx. We welcome him to the Express Now. Dr. Rosen, thanks for joining us.
All right, thank you for having me.
Well, first, you know, we want to know a little bit about your clinic. Can you just describe to us the type of patients that come in and out of your clinic every day?
About 15% and maybe 30% of our population came over in the 1980s from both Vietnam and Cambodia. And we primarily serve patients that have Medicaid, and about another 10 to 30% of those patients are patients without any insurance at all.
So under the president's hopeful plan, what he hopes to bring out and hopefully gets passed through, what would that plan mean to a clinic like yours?
The thing that I think about when I hear Obama's plan is expansion. We have so many more patients than we know what to do with, and I would really hope that that money allows us to expand, to get more doctors, possibly get an additional satellite clinic.
Very interesting. Now, we know the local impact of national health care reform plans might vary even within the city of New York. So let's check in on the SUNY Downstate Medical Center in Brooklyn. Dr. John LaRosa joins us now. He's the president of that hospital. Thanks for joining the Express, Dr. LaRosa.
Well, thank you for having me.
Okay, so when the overall health care reform in D.C., you hear buzzwords, you hear rationing, you hear choice to offer patients. From where you sit with your clinic there in Brooklyn, the hospital, how is the outcome of this debate likely to affect your service?
Well, first of all, I feel that the debate is a phony one in many ways. People now have their health care rationed. They may not realize it, but they do. There are many times when people have had a procedure refused, or a hospitalization refused, or a visit to the doctor refused. That's rationing.
From your perspective, which one of these proposals would work best for you in your type of situation?
Well, I think we can work with almost anything that provides universal coverage. So I think what the Obama administration has proposed is actually a pretty good set of ideas, a public plan to set the standards and to at least provide for people who might not be able to find insurance in some other way.
Lots of criteria, lots of discussion, so much more to go in this debate on health care. Dr. Rosen, medical director at the Montefiore Family Health Center, and Dr. LaRosa, president of SUNY Downstate Hospital. Thanks for joining us on The Express.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Before we leave health care to answer the question, why have all the liquor stores turned into wine shops? Let's take an express look back in time at medicine, New York style, in the 1950s.
My name is Bernadette Sullivan, and I remember when. I was born on the Lower East Side of Manhattan, and I lived there for most of my childhood. Both parents worked where I came from. We didn't have money that, you know, it wasn't the Beaver Cleaver family. But the children really didn't suffer because the neighborhood became your parent. If you had a problem, there was always somebody to go to. You got the measles, you got the mumps, you got chicken pox. The old ladies would get together at some point when somebody fell ill, and they would have a consultation. Well, those old ladies were not believers in physicians anyway, because they didn't think physicians knew anything. And they would ask each other, you know, is the fever, is there a rash, is there this, is there that? And then they would go to their apartments and they would prepare whatever the potions were. And they could range from soups to mustard plasters to what we used to call bonky. These were like suction cups that they invented. You used to take a glass that like jelly would come in, that kind of a size glass. And they would put oil in the bottom of it. They would get cotton. They'd stuff it to the bottom of the cup. It would stick to the oil. They would set the cotton on fire. And while it was on fire, they would turn this thing over and put it on your chest. Now, later I began to realize that the hope was that the vacuum would be created and put the fire out before any of this cotton fell on you. Fortunately, I never had the burn. But what this was meant to do was to remove any congestion from your chest. And then generally, when that treatment was over, they would twist it and they would pop off. Sometimes the suction was too great. So they would go and get like a butter knife and they would pry it off, you know, that then they give you the old don't move, you know, as I'm not moving. And I don't know, maybe it's my mind, but I used to feel better. And that was the way they treated in the tenements in the Lower East Side. Most of us survived.
Well, certainly a different approach to remedy health issues back in the 1950s. To give us your memories of how things used to be or to submit your own I Remember When, visit us at WNYC.org/express. Well, it's slightly raining in Central Park right now, a nice 76 degrees, maybe just muggy enough for you to reach for the AC. But before you hit that button or flip that switch, consider this. The cost of electricity in New York was almost 60% higher than the national average last month. But don't fret just yet. Things are actually getting better. Con Ed tells the New York Daily News that bills for June in New York City were 6% lower than they were in 2008. For more local news and to subscribe to Neighborhood Podcast, visit our website, WNYC.org/express. You can also help us pick the stories that we'll cover for you tomorrow. I'm Dara McIntosh. You're listening to The Express on WNYC, New York Public Radio.
Riding the subway is like spending time with my family because...
because there are just so many different characters that come in and out of the picture at odd times doing odd things, and I'm scared of them.
A whole lot of confusion. A whole lot of drama.
Spending time with my family is like riding the subway because...
there's so many different people that I haven't met yet.
And the person starting a conversation with me is not the one I want to talk to.
You learn who the crazy ones are and who not to talk to, and somebody's always eating impolitely.
What I mean by that is...
they're all crazy and they don't talk.
It's hard to compare the mass transit with the family. The mass transit does not have too much any good things about it. You know what I mean? So
the subway is like my family because I'm on it every day.
Interact with it every day.
I see my family every day.
I need it every day.
So, yeah, that's it.
Closeness of everyone involved.
Because you're very close to everyone on the subway.
I don't know.
So I guess I'd say that...
you know, it's pretty comfortable.
Not the best answer, but that's the first thing I thought.
Riding the subway is like spending time with my family because I get to see the same people every day. Those people on the train that 8 o'clock, 8:15, they're like family.
Well, today, Judge Nicholas Garifas of the Federal District Court in Brooklyn ruled that the New York City Fire Department used unfair recruitment exams that excluded hundreds of qualified minorities from serving as the city's firefighters. Now, the exams in question were used in 1999 and 2002. New York, like many big cities across the country, have firefighting forces that are really primarily dominated by whites. According to the city's law department, this May, roughly 3% of the 11,529 firefighters are African American and about 6% are Hispanic. So the Express wanted to know, how did this come to be? And we're joined by John Coombs, who's the president of the Vulcan Society, which is a group of black firefighters here in New York City that had this lawsuit and brought it to the attention of everyone. John, thanks for joining us here on the Express.
Thank you for having me.
Now, if you just bring us up to speed, was there anything about this exam? Because we keep hearing about this exam. Was there anything about the exam that was entirely hard or overwhelmingly stressful to where, you know, many people wouldn't be able to pass this test?
Well, let's talk about exams.
Okay.
If an exam has been exposed to give a particular result continuously, what is that exam testing? And what's the significance in our case as it relates to firefighters? The ruling's clear. It had no significance, as well as had disparate impact as it related to diversifying its population. We're not looking for a total black department. We're looking for a fair exam that gives individuals an opportunity to be tested on possibly general knowledge. So you mean to tell me if a city of 10 million people, time and time again, there's only 30 and 40 blacks who are interested in firefighting as a career? One. Two, there's only a few that can pass this exam. Both of those statements are inaccurate. So we have to realize if the process is flawed, then the results can't be the best results.
My question is, then, how do you fix it?
Well, it's a matter of inclusion. Once again, going back to EEOC recommendation, and we have to resolve some issues and remedy. It's quite a bit. I mean, it's not a quick answer. But to sum it up, if I may, you have to first and foremost make the individuals whole. That's the law. How do you make them whole? Well, let's see how they were affected with the harm they had to endure. Mm-hmm. So we have to look at that. And then we have to look at an ongoing, persistent, inclusionary mechanism that ensures true effort on diversifying this department. And that is paramount. As a city that's the most diversified city in the world, we cannot make excuses for lack of diversity in a department like this, of this magnitude in 2009.
Well, as a result of this lawsuit, the fire department tripled the number of African Americans and nearly doubled the number of Hispanics who took the exam in 2007. So that's some progress, we can assume. That's great progress, actually.
Well,
this is in comparison to the two exams from 99 and 2002.
Well, what you're looking at is minute numbers. You tripled the numbers in 2007. Now, that really sounds nice, but triple from 10 is 30. So you have 30 blacks coming on this time around, and you're bragging. Really, we're talking about a city of almost 10 million people, almost 12,000 positions, and you're happy with less than 400, and you're acting as if you've done something. I'm telling you that the public at large has got to make a concerted effort to pay attention and close attention to this hiring. Then and only then can the mayor, the commissioner, and everyone involved say success or failure. We need to reserve our applause until the final result is in.
Okay. Well, it sounds like it is a work in progress. John Coombs, president of the Vulcan Society of Black Firefighters here in New York City. Thanks so much, Mr. Coombs, for coming on and talking with us on The Express.
Thank you so much.
New York is a fast-changing city. We know that. We grind it out every day. But sometimes on your way home, don't you want to know why your neighborhood is changing in one way or another? Well, this happened to one of our producers, Janaea Williams, and she's in Brooklyn. So, Janaea, what transformed in Clinton Hill to make you notice these changes?
Well, before I ever moved to New York, I had a few friends who lived in the Clinton Hill neighborhood. And I was familiar with all the stores, and there was a liquor store that we went to because it was really convenient, and they had a great selection. And the selection I had to imagine, because it was hard to see through all the bulletproof glass. There was really thick floor-to-ceiling bulletproof glass that went around the whole perimeter of the store. So you kind of had to squint to look to see what you wanted. They may have sold wine back then, but I'm not sure. It's hard to browse wine through bulletproof
right.
glass. But we would get things that we needed for cocktails. And I finally moved to New York about 6 months ago, and I went back to the old liquor store, and it had magically transformed into a wine shop. And walking around the neighborhood, this had happened to a lot of different liquor stores in the neighborhood. They were more upscale and sold organic wine and things
nice.
Like that. So I decided to stop in and talk to the man behind the counter and see what had changed and why.
So he brought in this wine selection. Did he change the bulletproof glass?
There's no more bulletproof glass. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful wine store.
Great.
I'm Derek Barry. I am from the island of Grenada, the Spice Isle. I have owned the place a year and a half going on 4 years. It looks complete. Now it's completely different. The entire store was surrounded by bulletproof glass. But, you know, with my marketing background, I realized that people feel very intimidated by the bulletproof glass. And the neighborhood has changed drastically. When I first got here, there were lots of people, you know, hanging out on the street side. And now I don't see that. We see a lot of new faces, mixture of whites and blacks, everybody commingling, and greater number of people who are more health conscious. And the demand for wine begins to grow. So I have decided to pull the entire glass, put it down, bring it down, and so give the customer the opportunity to move in and around the store to select the items. And I do have a little bit of spirits, but 80% of my business now is wine. I learned a lot about wine. I learned the different type of wine, the regions in which they were grown, under what condition they were grown under, what goes well with fish, what goes well with red meat, the different types, really. And, you know, I had to educate myself, and in order to help the customers effectively, I had to educate myself.
Wow, that's nice. A nice selection of wines, even some organic, and you can get it without the bulletproof glass. But let me tell you, all this changed. Did you bring anything back for us here at the Express?
I did. I brought back two wines. It looks like a German Riesling and a South African Shiraz.
Very nice. Janaea Williams, she's the best producer. She goes out on a story and she brings back favors for the crew of the Express. We can't wait for after the show to uncork this. Thanks, Janaea.
Thank you.
If you want the Express to look into changes in your neighborhood, sign up for our Public Inside Network and become a source for the Express at our website, wnyc.org/express. For a lot of Caribbean immigrants in New York, the recession is not only about losing jobs or homes. It's about suddenly not being able to care for loved ones who reside thousands of miles away. Cordell Street reports on New York's barrel shipping industry and the families which depend on this trade to keep the basic necessities flowing to those back home, an even bigger challenge in this economy.
In a blue and white building on the outskirts of East New York, Brooklyn, rows upon rows of cardboard barrels are stocked and restocked, shipped in and shipped out. This busy hub, located on Linden Boulevard, is Laparkin, the second largest shipping company in the U.S., catering exclusively to the Caribbean.
Core markets are Guyana, Trinidad, Barbados, Antigua, Jamaica, Suriname.
That's Bobita Rambridge, Laparkin's marketing and customer service manager.
People come here, and those ties are so strong with the families and friends back home, that they come here automatically assuming that the next thing they have to do is to start packing a barrel or a box or finding some money to send back home to help their relatives.
Cash is easily wired to the Caribbean, but immigrants prefer to ship barrels of food, clothing, even appliances, due to the high cost of living in their home countries. Barrels can hold up to 800 pounds, and on average, they cost about $100 to send. Chris Mohammed is Guyanese. When I caught up with him, he had just finished shipping his second barrel for the month.
I think it's a great thing when you can actually send the merchandise because, yes, you do get things in Guyana, but the cost of it is going to be at least 2 to 3 times more. And there, I know, as a child, I always remember getting a barrel. It just had this amazing feeling to it as opposed to just getting money.
This nostalgia trade has spurred a dynamic industry with hundreds of barrel shippers located in the New York area. Most are Caribbean entrepreneurs operating out of major West Indian neighborhoods like Flatbush, Brooklyn, and Jamaica, Queens. Dwight Wisdom has been on the same spot on Rogers Avenue for 19 years. He provides door-to-door service to Jamaica.
Extra clothes. Somebody coming from America, you get some nice jeans, you get some nice tops. Everybody looking for nice sandals, shoes. So it's important, please. And when you send a barrel, not only one person gets, like 10 different people. Get a soap, this, that, pound of flour, some sugar, whatever. So it works, you know.
But both Wisdom and Rambridge agree that around the beginning of last year, something changed.
The shipping is down. People not working enough money, right? They have to take care of themselves here first. When the economy is down, everything gets slow.
Persons who previously would have sent 4 or 5 barrels a year have reduced it to 2, and in some cases 1, and they're saying, like you've said, for the bare necessities, school supplies, medical supplies, and the basic necessities of food that their relatives need home.
But that's just the dollars and cents. Emotionally, the recession has taken quite a toll on Caribbean immigrants who wrestle with guilt over their inability to care for their families.
It's again, that bond that's there that makes you feel that you have to, you're helping out. You have to. You have no choice. You may have to cut on some expense here, on some personal thing that you may have wanted here, but just to be able to send that item back home.
Mohammed says that not sending money or a barrel never occurs to most West Indians.
Well, I personally think it's the way we were raised. We were raised to take care of our families. We were raised to take care of our parents, our siblings. So I think it's embedded in us from a young age. And it just becomes part of our lifestyle. And we just do it for the love of it.
To face this economic challenge, companies are finding new methods to keep this barrel shipping industry viable. Leparkin has reduced prices all around and introduced new products, like the $25 economy box. Back inside his Rogers Avenue store, Wisdom is optimistic.
Well, we just have to stay and fight like anything else. He said, what I know, I don't know anything else. I'm too old now to go out and get a job. Somebody would be hiring me anyway. So that's it. You know.
For WNYC, I'm Cordell Street.
We leave you today with Roxanne Shanté's 1987 hit, Have a Nice Day. This Sunday, Newark is hosting the Rock Steady for Life Free Jam, an outdoor concert and food drive starting at noon. We're talking Q-Tip, Grand Poobah, U-God from Wu-Tang Clan, and a local legend from Queens, Roxanne Shanté. The details are on our website at wnyc.org/express. I'm Dara McIntosh. This is The Express on WNYC and WNYC.org.